Over 5% of Canadians who died last year were murdered by their own doctor. How does a society become that bloodthirsty? Welcome to The Conquering Truth. I'm Dan Horn.
I'm Connor Swim.
I'm Charles Churchill.
And I'm Joshua Horn.
In Canada, there's a law called MAID, Medical Assistance in Dying, which contributes to about 5.1% of the deaths in Canada, that where medical personnel participate in causing someone to die. Those are staggering numbers. And if you go to certain provinces, like Quebec is the highest, and it's over 7.3% of the people in Quebec who died last year, died by the hand of a medical personnel. It's hard to figure out by province how much it varies, because they tend to record more of the highs rather than which provinces are lowest. But to have an average of 5.1 across the country, this has to be countrywide. So how do you get a country that wants to facilitate the death of so many of its own people?
Yeah, as a Canadian here, I can answer that. I think that there's a lot of spiritual reasons, a lot of theological reasons why this takes place, how a society gets to that level. But we'll talk about that. But I think just from a practical standpoint, the healthcare system is just outrageously bad in Canada. Where I grew up, it's not out of the ordinary for one of the local hospitals to be shut down because of lack of employees. Having an older society in general, people are sick. And as most people are on government healthcare, if you've lived in the province for 6 months, you would be. So the nation is in staggering debt because of this. There's so many people that are being treated, and it's all coming from the government. And with having the hospitals being overrun with people and not enough staff, you have the issue of we have too many people. We have too many people to take care of, so, it's greed. They need to deal with this problem, and probably the worst way you can deal with it is by killing your people, but I think that's the path they're taking.
Wait, when you hear about, how wonderful government healthcare yes. is, you seem to be painting a different picture, Connor.
Yes, yes.
a far more realistic picture than how the government, or how the advocates for government healthcare tend to.
I can't speak for everybody, but I mean, my own experience, my grandmother, she was diagnosed with cancer in her spine, and they were very quick to give her surgery. I mean, it was like they found out, and then within a few days, she was having surgery. That sounds great, but then they were unable. There was a pretty good-sized hole in her back from the surgery, and instead of doing a skin graft, this is not life-threatening, so we don't really know when we're going to get to this, so they would send a nurse to her every few days to deal with it, patch it up and stuff. I don't remember how long it was. It was probably at least a year before, or even longer before she was able to get that skin graft. So that's the reality. If you're dying, you'll get treated, but
unless they can talk you to die.
Yeah, and this was also 2010, so it's gotten worse since then. So that's how they treat people.
It depends on who you talk to.
It does depend
on
who you talk
to. The doctors who are killing people said it's gotten a lot better.
Right, I'm sure. But the nurses I talk to, a lot of my friends' wives are nurses, and they'll at least admit how bad it is there.
Right. And when we think of the government, and to have that many people die, I don't think it's wrong to say the government encouraging people to commit suicide. When we think of that, we just have to recognize how opposite that is from what God created governments to do. Romans 13:4-5 says, "For he is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain, but he is God's minister and avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. Therefore, you must be subject not only because of wrath, but also for conscience's sake." And so God's saying the reason that he appointed civil magistrates was to stop evil. And you look at what's happening in Canada now, and it's not stopping evil, it's actually promoting evil.
The verse that you just read, Dan, talks about how that the government is supposed to reward good. They're supposed to punish evil. And you see how their attitude towards death is just completely different than it should be. We see somebody and they're getting close to death. And instead of going, we should turn around the way we think about death. They've been encouraging things so that people don't have family. They don't have big families. They don't have children. They don't have children around them in their death. They've taken things out of people's lives. And instead of going, we need to punish evil and reward good, they're going, what we need to do is to facilitate and funnel more towards death. That's what we need to do. Instead of turning people around. I mean, I remember the first second I heard it when somebody was mentioning it, your first thought is growing up, I would hear about suicide hotlines. I'm thinking about dying. And the person would go, let me try to talk you out of that. Let me try to give you all the reasons you should think about not dying. And we're doing the absolute opposite now.
Well, the interesting thing is, you know, you go online, like I was this afternoon preparing notes for this, and you go online and you search for MAID in Canada, right? Medically assistance in dying. And it's about suicide, but they don't give any warnings. But if you look at like medically assisted suicide, all these warnings pop up about if you're thinking about, so it's like if you're a Canadian or asking about Canada, they're like, it's fine to die.
Right.
If you're in America, they're afraid to get sued. So they're going, here's a hotline number that you can call. If you're looking up a question about suicide, here's a hotline number. Don't forget the hotline number.
They've hired the team that makes Disney commercials. You know, it's just the kid at the top of a slide. Whee! You know, like, put grandpa on the slide. At the bottom, don't worry about him anymore.
And so it was just really striking today looking at it, just how even like Google, how much their response is different if you're searching for suicide in the United States versus searching for suicide in Canada.
And one thing I think that we want to make clear is also that this isn't just a Canadian problem. You know, there's about a dozen states in the United States where this is legal, and a lot of those don't, I mean, at least we're not aware of public numbers as to how many people are actually committing suicide with the help of doctors in the U.S. But it is a growing issue in the U.S. where people are pushing for it, where people are saying that this is actually what a lot of people should be doing. It should be legal, and so, you know, Canada it might even be getting a bad rap because of how open they're being with some of it. Here it is still in some part done in the darkness. But then again, there have been some pretty high profile cases where like a father is trying to get his, you know, a handicapped child not to be, killed by, the mothers taking him to a doctor. So Canada definitely has some high profile issues, but the U.S. is right there behind it.
And if somebody actually has good statistics on U.S., it would be useful to find. I mean, the best I could find was a fairly low number across, but it was across states, and it was somebody making a reference from a bioethical journal. It wasn't a hard, you know, it wasn't like to a study or to someone doing government reporting.
So one thing that we have to recognize that we have to start with is God doesn't give an exception. He doesn't say, well, if you're in pain, it's okay to commit murder. He doesn't, right? Genesis 9:5-6 says, surely for your lifeblood, I will demand a reckoning. From the hand of every beast, I will require it. And from the hand of man, from the hand of every man's brother, I will require the life of man. Whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed, for in the image of God he made man. Just because you have cancer, and just because it's painful, or just because you're 100 years old, or just because whatever it is, just because you have psychological problems and you don't like to live anymore, God doesn't go, you've lost my image, so it's fine to destroy it. God says it's a sin to destroy it. It doesn't matter. And we've decided as a society, because of the weakness of the church, the Canadian society and the U.S. society is moving in the same direction, has decided the value of man is the pleasure he gets out of life. It's whether he's useful for society, but the biblical principle on which Western civilization is founded on is the idea man is made in the image of God. That's why we're different than other countries. That's why, Western civilization is different from the other civilizations and has prospered and is clearly leading the other civilizations. And the heart of it comes down to man's made in the image of God. And if you reject that, which Canada clearly has done, you should expect there to be real judgment and real damage done because God says he will render judgment for that.
Which goes back even to the, you know, the basic medical oath, which is, I guess, summarized as do no harm, though I think the version that they have now is a lot more complicated. But when you're helping people, when you're killing people intentionally, you can't do that under that. You have to start to redefine death to not be bad anymore. And so now killing people is actually helping them, you know, and so everything is now flipped on its head. And the whole purpose of doctors, which is to save life, to restore health, now to get this suicide in, that has to be just completely undermined.
And to some extent, you have to do that once you legalize abortion. It is the logical progression. Because if you say it's okay to murder the baby made in God's image, then that because they're not formed well enough, because they can't speak, because whatever reason, then why wouldn't you take somebody that's nearing the end of their life and apply the same criteria to them? They know the baby is as much human as the 95-year-old. So if you say it's okay to kill the baby who's, you know, quote unquote useless, then why shouldn't you kill the 95-year-old that's quote unquote useless?
In our founding documents, the phrase inalienable rights is used. And inalienable means you cannot sell them. You know, I mean, you don't own yourself. That's part of it, is this is not something that you have total control over. And we founded, like you said, Western civilization is founded on it. America was very clearly founded on it. It's something that people used to memorize until not that long ago. And so, you know, it's just a direct denial of that, and it's something we've completely lost. We now go, of course I own my life.
And we've, you know, talked about this a little bit, but in slavery there's been this twisted idea that the person bought the person's life. Well, the Declaration of Independence says it's inalienable, that you cannot sell your life. You can sell your labor, which is what slavery is. It's a sale of labor, but it's still murder if you kill a slave. Because it's not, you can't sell the right to your life. In assisted suicide, that's effectively what they're doing. And that's inalienable. That was from the beginning. And so when we think about this, when we think about the number of people that are dying, it is worth remembering that, I mean, abortion far outweighs this. It's far greater. I think the estimate is 75 to 100,000 abortions in Canada compared to like 325 to 345,000 deaths per year. So there's almost, you know, that's 20% compared to the 5% that are, but still.
And the 20% is probably low.
That's probably, only counting surgical abortions,
right. as opposed to,
you know.
Abortions caused by IUDs or other abortifacients.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. They're the contraceptives, most of them are abortifacients. So you have a lot more than that. And again, we can't look at them and go, well, look at how bad Canada is, because something like 1 out of 7 deaths in America are by abortion. And so you look at those numbers and we're not that much different. But we should be looking towards Canada and go, if certain political positions continue to be pushed and we shift that way, we'll end up in the same place as Canada. We shouldn't think that we don't have the same, you know, as much as Americans might want to look down on Canadians, we don't have that much cultural differences. They just have adopted the California and New York ways more than the rest of the country has.
The biggest advantage we might have with abortion is that it does seem like it may be more of a states' rights issue. And so you may
have constraints.
And you'll have
areas.
Constraints at different levels. But again, there's a lot of forces in a lot of states they desire murder. There are states that are very bloodthirsty.
See, when you look at, you know, gay marriage and even the COVID lockdowns, the government says to do something and people are very quick. I mean, I remember the statistics for, you know, when gay marriage was legalized, but it was very double digit approval, like split very quickly.
It went
quickly.
From 40-60 to 60-40, overnight.
Right.
And now it's actually come back, oddly enough, and more people, I think it's almost 50-50 now. Okay. So it is starting to shift back. But it was amazing that like polls a month apart with the decision in the middle, it shifted, you know, that much that the sides flipped.
And even, with COVID, people willing to report people for, you know, going to a party, being with friends, where you would never imagine just a month before it happened, who would ever do that? You'd never think that people would be willing to do that. Plus, the warning is, you know, you may think a culture would reject this, but, you know, when I've moved away from Canada in 2015, I never even considered this concept that this would be a thing that would happen, but doesn't take very long.
I mean, it's one of the things we need to realize is that, you know, we talk about one of the things the church does is the church speaks, and the church really has an authority, the power to speak to things. And the church is very quiet today on a lot of issues. But the government, by its actions speak. And when the government says something's right, like you're saying, I mean, it has a major, I mean, that verse you read in Romans. I mean, there's this part of it where you go, if they say something is good, the nation sees what they say is good. When they say something is evil, the nation sees what they say is evil. And it shapes all sorts of thoughts. Just like a parent can make bad rules in his house and you see the kid acting a certain way, or you see the children going, you're being very inconsistent, you're allowing this, that must mean this is good. That's what happens in a nation, and it happens all over it.
And when you look at the jurisdiction of the church, where you have churches that, I mean, they just have jurisdiction over their members. And so the only influence they have is by speaking, as opposed to the government, really is an authority. And when the authority speaks to that person who has no ecclesiastical authority in their life, what do they expect? Except, I mean, this is what we should expect, that unless you're speaking and shining forth light to make it look evil, they're going to go, well, no, the government's being nice. These people are suffering. So let's put them to death. Let's put them out of their misery. We're showing kindness. We're showing mercy. Because, you know, the Bible says that the mercies of the wicked are cruelty. And that's what this is that they're selling it going, we're showing mercy. And the reality is it's cruelty and murder.
Right. A lot of people really get nervous about these things because they call them slippery slopes. And what we're saying is it's not a – I mean, yes, going towards sin causes more sin. That's not the reason why you stay away from sin. Sin is bad enough on its own. Saying that you can murder someone for any reason, that's evil. Just point blank, the murder is evil. And I mean, I think, you know,
and God says he'll judge for it.
Right. I mean, you know, one of the episodes we did not that long ago, we looked at, like, in the Old Testament, where if someone died outside of a city, God literally required the closest town to come and offer a sacrifice because someone
was
killed.
Supposed to investigate it, too,
right.
If they could find
it. But when you couldn't figure out what had happened, when you couldn't figure out who had done it, I mean, this was like how seriously God took death, how seriously he took a single death. Someone died out here. We're not sure what happened. Let's make sure that God isn't angry at us. Let's make sure that God, I mean, and so whereas today we go, of course we have the right to kill.
And we did an episode on suicide and why it's wrong, and we're going to try not to rehash everything we said in there. But, I mean, but one important thing is that, you know, there's a lot of ways that we unintentionally end up encouraging suicide or even the way we speak about it as acceptable, or we're covering it up, or we're not calling it wrong, or, you know, we want to be sensitive to the person who killed themselves, and so we'll just, you know, not even mention it, not even mention that they had killed themselves, and certainly not say it was wrong, and it was a testimony to their character. And, I mean, when we're doing that, that we're on the slippery slope, the slope that is sin the whole way down. So, I mean, that's not the way we ought to be dealing with these things.
Right. I mean, even just a few days ago, a famous actor's daughter committed suicide when she was like 42 years old. And they talk about what a wonderful life she had and how she was a blessing to everyone. No, it's all lies the whole way through. Somebody who reaches the point of committing suicide, they've caused a lot of problems for other people. And that doesn't mean that they should commit suicide. I don't mean that. But to pretend like that she was this loving daughter, this wonderful person, she was such a wonderful friend, that's not how it works. Yet we want to not judge her for her suicide, and then people say all these other things about her. And this is like Rick Warren when his son committed suicide, about how he was such a wonderful Christian. No, he wasn't. And we want to lie so that suicide becomes acceptable. And part of it is we're just a bloodthirsty society. We just love to see the shedding of blood. So we want to go, oh, this person was wonderful. They just decided one day to commit suicide. That's not what it looks like.
I mean, I was just getting ready actually to debate whether to bring that up, because there was Martin Short's daughter. There was Tommy Lee Jones's daughter. There was the guy who did Princess Bride, the guy from Meathead.
Rob Reiner.
Rob Reiner, his son who – who killed his parents. There was about four, five, maybe six, and very recent that were middle of life. They've lived very protected, you know, they've lived easy lives. And I'm not saying like
wealthy,
they didn't have
at a, least wealthy
that's
lives.
What I mean by, yes. I mean, as far as their parents could provide for them, they have been provided for. And they have had a lot of things, but then you see where they go. And this is exactly what happens is you look at it and you go, they should be the happiest people on earth. They should be. And so you have to understand how hateful it is, like you were saying, to look at that and go, do you not understand what's happening? This is the fruit. This is the fruit of this type of life. This is the fruit of that. This is not having restraints, being able to do whatever you want. And so there's this part of it where this is exactly what Canada's doing, is you raise a society to say, I own my life, I can do what I want, and then you tell them, hey, we'd like you to kill yourself. Maybe you'd like to kill yourself too. Maybe,
oh, you're not allowed to say that to people.
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. You just build protocols and procedures that allow that to be the actual what you're saying to them.
But if you read the criteria, that's against the criteria. But right. You know that happens all the time.
And so there's this part of it where you think you're doing a kindness, but you're really doing some of the most evil things you could do. And like you said, when this happens in the U.S., the answer should be you should look at it and go, consider their ways. Is this what's good for your child? People are always like, oh, I don't want my child to have a difficult time. Well, guess what? That's what makes you tougher. That's what makes you stronger. These are the things that actually help you grow. And you see
and,
this result.
And the
and you
parents
go,
are looking. And I mean, in the United States, a lot of times it's not driven by money. We'll talk in a bit about how much it's driven by money in Canada. But in the United States, a lot of times it's not driven by money as much as it is by, you know, you're going to have to take care of your parent. And, you know, and there's this, we don't want the responsibility. We don't want to make the sacrifice. We don't want to do anything that's hard. It's easier if we just kill off dad.
Right.
So it is worth looking at their criteria. And I think it's, you know, this is from the Canadian government's summary of the law. So to be eligible for medical assistance in dying, you must meet all of the following criteria. You must be eligible for health services funded by a province or territory or the federal government. What I find really interesting about this first one is they aren't ashamed at all about what they're doing. Because you're not allowed to get medical assistance in dying if you're not going to save the government money. It's illegal to help somebody die in Canada unless the government will save money. And that's not how they phrase it, but it's pretty close. Be eligible for health services funded by a province or territory or the federal government. Unless they are going to reduce their funding, you're not allowed to kill yourself. You're not allowed to assist in killing them. I mean, when you think about that, that is just so, right? It's the citizens of Canada that the government's trying to kill off. Not all the immigrants and stuff. The ones that aren't eligible for health care, they don't get killed off. They're not allowed they're not covered by the law. You can't pay a doctor to kill you off. It's only if the government will save money can they knock you off. If you're a recent immigrant, then they can't kill
you
off.
But
you
don't have to be a citizen. I mean, you can be a green card equivalent holder.
Yes.
I'm sure they still kill you.
So after 6 months, you get a green card in Canada?
No, that's when you can receive medical. I don't know the details of the green card. I think it would definitely vary.
Yep.
Depending on case, but it's 6 months of living there, having residence in a province or territory.
And a relevant verse to that is 1 Timothy 6:9-10. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness, and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. And it might seem like, well, you know, you'd be able to separate issues of life and death from issues of money, but you know, that's giving the greedy human heart way too much credit. And I mean, there's a lot of ways to justify it. I mean, like you were talking about, you're looking at an overloaded system. And even if it might not benefit you personally, but to say, well, I'm helping people by taking this sick person off this earth, I'm actually helping people, helping all these other people who will now get a chance at treatment. And so it's something that is, the greed can be insidious. It's not always about dollars in your pocket.
And one thing that, you know, I was looking up that I couldn't connect these two together, but in you know, it's hard to see how there wouldn't be real incentives here, is that doctors in Canada get paid one of three ways, depending on their agreements and everything else. A lot of the rural doctors just get paid a salary. But most of the other doctors get paid one of two ways, which is they get paid based on, you know, fee for service, just like in the U.S., right? You go in and they give a medical code and you get paid a certain amount of money for that medical code. But the other way is, and they're starting to move towards this in the U.S., which should concern us because there's real incentives here to do things where you just take a pool of people and you get paid per capita. So you have this X number of patients, this 1,000 patients. And so for that 1,000 patients, you get X number of dollars. If they come to you all the time, that's your problem. If you can get them healthier so that they don't come all the time, then you make more money. And so somebody that's in that situation, you are setting them up where all of a sudden somebody comes in with, like, the young man who you know, the mother was pushing for suicide and killed the same day and all this stuff. He was diagnosed with diabetes. Well, if you're the doctor and you're going, you know, he's 28, I'm going to have to treat his diabetes for the next 60 years, 50 or 60 years, this is going to cost me a lot of money. Or I can talk him into committing suicide, and my pool of people is now significantly healthier. My work for the next 50 years is reduced. You are really giving perverse incentives to the doctor. And it's really easy to think, as we do in this country, we kind of go, oh, doctors, they're such holy and moral and righteous people. No, they're not. They're people. And a lot of them are very greedy, or you would have no abortionists. I mean, these are people that are chopping up babies, and they're willing to do that. And people then look at medical doctors and go, oh, look how much we should esteem a medical doctor. No, they're people. And a lot of them are quite greedy. And to think that this wouldn't affect the numbers? Of course it would affect the numbers.
We just did an episode on total depravity where we looked at Jeffrey Epstein and talked about how evil he is, but people act shocked that a man could be that evil. And the answer is, without constraints, men are that evil. That is what men become. And this isn't just constraints. This, I mean, you know, like, you look at anything. You look at, like, divorce. The fact that they allow no-fault divorce, the fact that people can advertise for it, is attacking marriages. I mean, this is a way to attack marriages. Don't take your vows seriously. Even though you said this, even though you said you're going to do these things, don't take it seriously. I mean, how many days, if at a certain point in your life, would you contemplate a divorce? There are days you'd seriously consider it more than others.
But Charles, there was divorce before no-fault divorce. There was abortion before it became legalized. They use these exceptions because it is largely constrained for most people, as a rule, to then remove the constraint, and then all of a sudden 50% of marriages end in divorce. All of a sudden you have these women, the number of women that are you know, aborting their children skyrockets, and they pretend, but it was happening before. Yeah, it was happening before that 1%, 2% of marriages ended in divorce. Now it's 50%. You remove the constraint, you get more of the sin.
Before people, you know, before everybody was miserable, and now they're all happy, and, you know, I mean, now all the marriages are, it's solved all the problems too, right? I mean, they don't really talk about that part either.
Right, where people actually went, well, I'm stuck with this person, I'm going to have to figure it out. So the next one is that you must be 18 years old and mentally competent. You know, that mentally competent is very loose too. But at least they're not killing children yet, other than babies in the womb. Those they kill. Yeah, wholeheartedly.
They also don't consult them.
And they also don't consult them.
See, I thought that being suicidal was like a mental illness.
And it so was until they eliminated it so that they could kill people.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like wanting to kill yourself should mean that you're not mentally competent. I mean, anyway, obviously it doesn't work if you're letting people do that.
One of the reasons that they do same day assisted suicide, they go, is because that person, they don't know how long they'll be able to be competent to say that they can kill themselves. And so because they might lose competency at any time, you have to hurry up and murder them. I mean, when you put criteria like this, people are going to flex the criteria to get the results that they want. And these aren't hard criteria. What does it mean to be competent? That's hard in terms of something measurable, an objective criteria. It's a very subjective criteria.
The next criteria is that they must have a grievous and irremediable medical condition. And so here, I mean, again, there may be more. This is a summary. The actual law may have more specificity in it. But in the end, it's always going to be driven by doctors. I mean, it's the policy. I mean, when you deal with medical policies, you can write it the way you want to write it.
And aren't there two tracks?
There are two.
Does this apply to both of them or just one of them?
This is the summary of the law, which would have both tracks in it.
Okay. So I think one track is one that's terminal then and one that's not.
So the track one, I think the term they use is reasonably foreseeable death. And track two is that they don't have a reasonably foreseeable death. So supposedly 96% of cases fall under track one that they can, we can see you're going. I mean, in their summary of reasonably foreseeable is that you were very near death. But again, some of these people, they could live another 10 years.
Yeah.
And so.
And the second one, I think it is a bit harder to get approved for it.
It is supposed to be harder.
So they do. I mean, they're not just like a complete all safeguards completely off, but.
But they've only been doing it 5 years.
Yeah. I mean, one is too many.
And the issue of even the irremediable condition, where I think that's kind of track two is what that is. And track one is that it's a medical condition that's supposed to be driving you to your death.
Right.
And so, but the other one would be, I mean, and this young man who kind of raised the story that made us decide to do a podcast on it. I mean, he didn't, but obviously his father, I think, did. But he just had, type 2 diabetes. I mean,
he had gone blind, I think, in one eye, and his other eye, he had very, I mean, so it was advanced diabetes for his age. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm literally becoming the person who's making the argument for, you have to understand. I mean, but when they make the argument, this is literally what they're going to do. Is he had lost sight in one eye. He had lost most of his sight in his other eye. He's fairly young. Diabetes is always debilitative. It's going to get worse. It's more of just how much can you slow it down? So the fact that he was at this age meant he was just basically looking at a downhill life until you die. And you go, okay, isn't that what everybody is at a certain point? I mean, because that really is what life becomes at a certain point for everybody, is you're going downhill.
And there was someone, I don't remember if it was Canada or Europe, but I think that they were able to get approval for suicide for autism. I'm not sure. Somewhere they did that or something similar. So one that is not even life-threatening. It's just inconvenient, unpleasant. But
people live with diabetes for a long time.
Right.
So it's not.
Right. Right.
It can be if you lose control, it could be life-threatening. But a lot of times it's not that life-threatening.
At a certain point, I mean, when you read something like this, track two is quality of life. You know what I mean? That's effectively, and it's going to come down to marketing. You know what I mean? It's, can you sell it? Do you believe that the board, I mean, and this is why we say that, this is the slippery slope part of it. You know, the evil part is you say it's okay to kill somebody. And after that, you start making
And we act like, I mean, track two is like almost 5%. If I remember
right,
correctly.
Yes, 4.8, 4.7.
Of assisted suicides.
Yes.
And so it's not like it's rare either. It's not like 1 out of 1,000. It's 1 out of 20, which is a pretty significant number.
Sure.
And one thing also to note about this is when the doctor is saying you have this medical condition, you don't know that you actually have the medical condition. A doctor diagnosed you with it. And I mean, doctors, I think, just paint very broadly, they're pretty good at their job. Often, if they say you have something, more likely than not, you have it. But all the time, I mean, if you're talking about, painted broadly, if they diagnose you with stage 4 cancer, very likely going to die. On the other hand, there's thousands and thousands of people diagnosed with it. There's many people who've been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, and they live a long life. Because the doctor got it wrong, or there was some very unusual progress of the disease. So if you're looking at individuals, you don't know that any one individual, the doctor is right at all. So that just because the doctor says this, it's not like they're saying, you could get the diagnosis, have no symptoms, no major symptoms, and then you can get, you can have them kill you. It's not like you're saying, put me out of my misery, necessarily. You're saying, I trust the doctor. The doctor told me this. Let's go through with it.
And it's important to compare that to abortions because, I mean, in utero, they give these tests. And there's a lot of false positives on those tests where they are working to convince people to commit murder, to murder their baby because they had a false positive. Your child has Downs, and the child's born and doesn't have Downs.
Oh, we had somebody know cases like that. Off of an ultrasound, they saw our daughter's foot, They said she's got a big gap between her big toe and her next toe. That's a pretty good sign of Downs. I'm just telling you, you should go ahead and expect that's the case. And they didn't say you should kill your baby because
they
of that.
They don't say that, but most people would advocate killing Downs' baby.
And they were encouraging additional testing, and we said we're not going to take the additional testing. But what I'm saying is they were right there. They were like, hey, look, I'm just telling you, it's like probably a 70-80% chance that she has Downs.
Going along with your point when you look at this criteria, who's the expert? The doctor. You know, if you're going to refer to somebody as, well, who can make this choice? Going along with what you're saying, you appeal to a doctor. They're the ones who are able to kill you are also the ones that can diagnose you, that they basically are the jury and executioner, essentially, in this situation. Same with abortion, too, is, well, you can kill a baby depending, you know, if it's the mother's life is in danger. Who decides that? You know, the doctor can say, well, you know, this seems mentally stressful on you. This could be bad for you. You can kill your baby. Your life could be in danger.
Some mothers die giving birth, so that might happen to you. So therefore, your life is threatened. Right, and it really has to do with the morality of the doctors, and we shouldn't be thinking that these are highly moral men. I mean, they're not. There's not some special thing about doctors.
Right. There is
a special thing about doctors, which is in Canada they're allowed to kill people with no consequences.
Right.
Right, and that's what I was going to
say.
Well,
it's medical personnel. Right. A nurse can kill you too. But I mean, one of the things, you know, talking about that. When you see the next statistic, it's really important to connect these, right? A doctor tells you, you have stage 4 cancer, and then 4.8% of deaths happen the same day that the person talks about it. And so you go, you have stage 4 cancer, you're going to have chemo, you're going to have this, and then maybe you'll live for 6 months. And the person goes, I don't want to go through all that, and they're dead. Right? I mean, that's how it works. And I'm not saying they all happen that way. Sometimes the people come in from outside and approach, but you have to figure that 4.8%, a decent number of them, they just got a shocking diagnosis. And they have that shocking diagnosis. And the first time they talk to a doctor, they're dead, almost 5%.
And it is possible that right now, no one could be eligible just off of a diagnosis. That is very possible that the protocols and where they are in the process is that they don't do that yet.
However, how do they ever have more than a diagnosis, though?
Because you start actually seeing, like, in other words, like...
But they're still diagnosing symptoms.
What I'm saying is they may require them to be in a certain amount of pain before they do it. They may require them to have...
And my point is,
the day of the diagnosis, they may not even have... They may have just had some early symptoms. You know what I mean? So I'm just...
Right.
But what I'm saying is there's no reason to expect that they won't move to that point, because in the end, what happens is when you do these reviews, you're offering people something, and if people want it, they're going to say, you gave it to so-and-so. The answer is, don't I fall under it? You know what I mean? It's by its nature, it is something that is going to take shape to give people what they want, both the government and people.
I don't know, Charles. With all these defenses, it seems like you're pretty pro-suicide.
No. I'm saying it's going to be. I'm saying that's what it's going to move toward. I'm just saying right now, I don't have proof that right now that they would allow someone to go, we know you have stage 4 cancer. Do you want to die today? I have read
an anecdote where somebody came in for a bad knee that was causing them lots of pain, and they were told, "We can get you a knee 6 months to a year. You could die today if you wanted to."
That was a reported story. If they're really doing that, they are absolutely not following their protocols.
Why would they follow their protocols? Because the point of the protocols, I mean, the point of the suicide is to save the money.
I understand that. So that's what I'm saying. But I'm just going, people should recognize, even if it's not that bad, because I'm sure there are people going.
Well, I mean, this person was like posting about it because they're like, this just happened to me today.
I tend not to believe anything people that say stuff like that.
I understand that.
So that's just more my...
But I also can easily believe that's the case, because this is the way the system is working in Canada now. I mean, there are people that are like procedures that we would think of as very basic. Like you have a bad knee, you schedule your knee replacement. In the U.S., that's just normal. Not so in Canada. It's like, this is causing you severe pain. Well, I guess it's severe enough. pain that we can actually put you on the list for a knee.
Right. I mean, once you move into this, if there is nothing that morally prevents you from killing anybody once you move into this range. It's just whether they want it and whether you can get approval for it. That's it. And so you should if you're not watching this and you don't understand that we're coming this from a religious perspective, going, they are sending people to hell. They are telling them, hey, this is hurting you right now. They kill them and they wake up in hell. But if your attitude is they kill them and their life is just over and there's nothing to it, then guess what? You're pretty much signed up for, this could go really anywhere. It really doesn't matter as long as it works for that country.
And yeah, when you start with the secular perspective, in the end, if your belief is and your the view of the government is when somebody dies, they just go away. They go back into the ether. They become part of the
healthcare system.
If they just disappear when they die, then you go, well, why should they suffer pain? And the reality is they're denying that they're made in the image of God. And as a society, we've decided, and again, the broader society, Western civilization, we've decided that being made in the image of God doesn't matter that much. And if it doesn't matter for a baby in the womb, it doesn't matter for a 70-year-old with cancer. And we should expect it to move that way unless the church wakes up. But, these statistics about, the 4.8, this is their statistics, and they are concerned about it, to be fair. The Solicitor General's writing about it going, this doesn't seem right. The MDRC reviewed a selection of Track 1 MAID deaths where the request and the provision of MAID occurred close together, typically within a 24 to 48-hour period. Same day or next day provisions only occur in a small proportion of Track 1 MAID deaths, 219, which is 4.8% of Track MAID 1 deaths in 2023. Most often, the provision of MAID within the same day or next day of a written request are completed for persons who present with profound intolerable suffering, severe clinical and functional decline, i.e. imminent death, and or when there is a risk for loss of decisional capacity to provide informed consent. One of the main reasons that you kill people on the day that they come to you, or that they're supposed to introduce the concept. I have trouble believing that always happens either. But yeah.
Introduce what concept?
Of that they want suicide. The doctor's not allowed to suggest it to them by law. They have to, which we'll see in the next criteria. They have to request it. But
have you heard of MAIDs? Oh, you're asking about MAID.
Well, come on. You know how in a medical field like that, you think a nurse isn't going to come up and go, you should ask him about this. Part of it is, though, that they're going, okay, they're going to have trouble giving consent. So we have to hurry the death along because they'll have trouble giving consent. Well, why will they have trouble giving consent? There could be a few reasons. One of them could be they have borderline ability to give consent now. And maybe you shouldn't really take their consent as consent. And so there's this real pressure to say, well, if the consent is marginal, let's kill them quicker.
And like you said, it's interesting reading some of the documents because it was clear there was a point where this was the year over year, the rate was increasing pretty significantly. And the government had some concern about the amount that it was increasing and going, we expected it to level off at this point. And I wouldn't attribute any of, they're always, anything that's political is always going to be viewed with, we have to make sure we don't cause a scandal in this way. But they're also going to be looking at going, we also don't want to cause people who could be productive to the society. We don't want to, they're going to look at it and go, this is financial on both sides, right? And so I'm sure they're also looking at it going, we don't want to tip the scales too far in the other direction because that could also cause us lots of problems in the other way. And so it's not morals in the sense of like them going, life is sacred. It's going, there's some life that's useful and there's some life that's less useful.
But even, they were concerned, and it depends where the concern is, right? Because if you're in the health service, they're going, the concern is that it's not 20% because that would save us more money. And you look at the Solicitor General that we just read, and he's going, we're kind of promoting murder here.
Right.
This is kind of disturbing.
Right.
And you can have the same government that has both of those, the people that are holding both of those views at the same time and are conflicting in those views.
Absolutely. And if it's an election year.
Right. And so, but all of this comes down to, like you were saying, that they were concerned about the rate of increase. But then it used to be that there was a mandatory 10-day waiting period when they first passed the law. And then in 2021, they eliminated the 10-day waiting period. So that now 5% of the people are killed, like, right away. I mean,
right.
This and the Solicitor General is going, this doesn't seem right. All right, that's just took an excerpt out of the report. But the report really is, this is pretty concerning that we have this many people that are being killed really quickly.
Right. We're making fun of America for letting people have guns. And they said we can make them wait 10 days.
Yeah, there's a waiting period for guns, but they're not a waiting period for the doctor to stick a needle in your arm and kill you. And part of it is that as societies, we've decided that the highest standard of the society is to never suffer, to never have any problems, to never have any difficulties. And that's not how God designed the world. I mean, it's through suffering that we turn from our sin. It's through suffering that we mature in our faith. Suffering in God's plan has really significant reasons. He's not arbitrary and just goes, ha, 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 I just want these people to suffer. I mean, Christians really suffer, and they really suffer because God knows what is good. You know, it says in James 5, 10 through 11, my brethren, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord as an example of suffering and patience. Indeed, we count them blessed who endure. You have heard of the perseverance of Job and seen the end intended by the Lord, that the Lord is very compassionate and merciful. God puts us in situations where we suffer so that we can testify, so that we can be blessed. And so Canada's saying, well, if you get in that position, I'm going to kill you so that you're not blessed. Because they go, it's not a blessing to ever suffer. And God goes, it's a real blessing to suffer at times.
I mean, one of the things we should also realize is some of this is just purely the result of creating, of people depending on the government. Because there's this part of it where if you largely die at home, if you're with your family, then each person's suffering becomes a private, separate thing.
Right.
You move all the suffering into one location, and what happens is, I mean, the people whose job it is to take care of your suffering family goes, there's so much suffering here. That's all there is suffering. All the suffering becomes concentrated, and in fact, it's not, Johnny doesn't know his grandfather, and he hasn't seen his grandfather, and been gone in and sat with him and read to him, and you know what I mean? There are all these things that it ends up being this, it ends up being more of a familial thing. It ends up being distributed. It ends up being in the places where it should be, as opposed to, well, I really don't want to take care of them in the first place, which is already a problem. And so if you don't want to take care of them, then you're expecting this person who mainly has a bottom line to take care of them. It's really just the end result of a system of not caring.
And it's really important to recognize, you know, as you were saying, that I was thinking of Ecclesiastes 7, where it says it's better to go in the house of mourning than it is to go in the house of feasting. Because when you go in the house of mourning, when you go and read a book to your grandfather who's dying, and you see their death, it makes death real. And one of the things that you see with children now is because we've separated and we've kind of separated that suffering of death and the difficulty away and put up people in nursing homes, put people in hospitals, we separate it, is that there's a invincibility and a sense among the children that they're almost immortal and that these things won't happen to them. And it's really, really useful for people to understand death at a young age. That's really useful to say I shouldn't just mess around my whole life. It's really useful to say I shouldn't just expect that I can do everything and survive and do really stupid things. And, you know, it's a real constraint on society. It's a real blessing to see that mourning.
Yeah, and I think we've deprived families of that, and then we've caused the people who we've tasked with doing this. They're gonna have a compelling argument. Because you've already accepted the fact that all the suffering is going to happen there. And so if you're looking at them, they're all going to be like, listen, this is all we deal with, is we just sit around and we watch these people die. That's what we do.
And you know what? What is also obvious to me, just having been around enough, is they're only going to do it to a certain percentage of people. They'll choose who they want to try to get to die.
Sure.
Because there'll be people who they'll go, yeah, he's not going to listen. I'm not going to try. And there'll be people that they'll go, he doesn't have family, or he's already depressed. Or, I mean, they'll choose their targets because it is a form of oppression, and they will choose their targets of who they want to lean on. Because it is an act of leaning on people. And let's be serious. You know, I talked to a Canadian doctor, actually, and I was saying, you know, it seems to me that medical schools inherently, they try to structure their medical programs to teach you that you're a god. And he went, yeah, absolutely, in Canada. That's what they all do. You're God. The patient has no right to say anything to you. You should just shut them up and go, I'm the expert. Why are you talking? And then, I mean, that was 15 years ago or something that I had this conversation with him. But that was he was trained in Canada to be a doctor. They were trained to be gods. And so you walk into that situation and they're going to judge, you know, you should really die. And then they'll figure out how to convince you of it.
And one of the summary notes was that all of the deaths were done by about a large percentage were done by 89 providers. So, you know, I mean, so it won't just be you'll pick your people. Just like with abortion, there will be people who specialize in
and they'll be the doctors that are really easy to get an appointment with.
Yeah, I mean, so I mean, but I mean, just, you know, it's kind of that thing, you pick your doctor, pick your diagnosis, and there will be people who refer people over to other people because they know they have a good means of recommending these things. You know, they have
let's be serious. It's really easy to pretend that people aren't people, but doctors become gynecologists for a reason. Male doctors. There's a reason. There's a certain type of person that's going to choose to go into that field. And there's a certain type of person that's going to choose to go into the field that they kill people. And it's not the kind of person that you want to, you know, have as a neighbor.
The first one's the one that loves babies, right?
No.
I mean, sometimes.
Sometimes, but a lot of times
that's obstetricians.
Oh,
not necessarily.
I don't know all these Latin terms.
I mean, you could be an OBGYN, but there are people who just specialize in they're gynecologists. Yeah. And I mean, there's this joke, if you're a woman coming up and you're going to be a doctor, they were like, oh, a lot of you become gynecologists. And that was very true. A lot of women do become obstetrics and gynecologists. And there are men who like doing babies, but there was always the joke when I was looking to see if I wanted to be a doctor. I was a paramedic. I spent as much time as I could in the hospital and I interviewed as many doctors as I could, and they basically said, yeah, there's doctors who are gynecologists, they're called perverts.
Yeah.
That was the, you know, and it was a joke, but it was a joke for a reason.
And yeah, I was talking to a doctor about the when they kind of choose what specialty they're going to be close to the end of medical school, about what direction they're going to go. And he went, yeah, I knew them in medical school. I knew who was going to be the gynecologist. It's not like it's secret. And you also know the guys that are going to be the eye doctors. I'm not the ophthalmologist.
Right.
I'm
the
not
surgeons,
saying,
the, yeah.
The, right. The guy who's guys. The guy who doesn't want to get his hands very dirty, he'll want to be an ophthalmologist. The guy who's kind of, you know, pervert, he'll want to be a gynecologist. The guy who likes to build things, he'll want to be the surgeon. And you can look at their interests and then read what field they'll specialize in. And we shouldn't act like it's different than that. And the people who specialize in killing people, not the kind of people that you want to be around.
They're called serial killers.
They are.
And of course, that's only half the story, because another criteria is that the person makes a voluntary request for medical assistance in dying. So, I mean, it's the same as abortion. You know, when there's an abortion, in 99% of the cases or something like that, that there's a doctor who's a murderer. Staff who's a murderer. There's a mother and a father, and they're all on board with it. And they all are committing a sin. And so you wouldn't have this explosion of medically assisted suicide in Canada if you didn't have people who believe that medical, or that they have control over their own life. They should decide when they live and when they die, and they are willing to take their life in their own hand and end it with the help of a doctor.
You know, people that are younger that are watching this, you know, under the age of 70, you don't realize, and I'm not saying I'm over 70, I'm saying it's hard to imagine, unless you've been involved with it, just how many people prey on people that are late in life. I mean, there's so many scams, so many attacks, because people get less quick in their thoughts. They get less understanding of technology because it passes them by and all these things. And just the ease at which you can manipulate people as they get older to pretend like, yeah, they're the ones that have to make the voluntary request. Yeah, sure. But they can go to their son and go, you know, you need to schedule this out because you need to be at your mother's house for 3 hours a day in the morning and the evening because they're going to need really a lot of medical health care. And they'll go tell their mother, you know, maybe you should think about killing yourself. And there are so many scams. There's so many manipulations. To say that they're voluntarily doing it, they have pressure from all kinds of sides, especially when you have a society that says the child's pleasure is the most important thing. They get older and all of a sudden the child's looking at it and going, really, do I want to visit her house every week or every day and help out with this medical condition and stuff? It's a lot easier if she just offs herself.
Oh, the number of parents who have raised selfish children and they realize in their age they are subject to the cruelty of their children, the passive, just selfish cruelty of, you know, whether they're the number of people you'll go to a nursing home and you'll see them, and their parents when they first, you know, when they first moved them in, they came to visit, but they haven't seen them in a really long time, and they're so desperate for any contact, and they're so, I mean, it is you're so easily oppressed at that age on every angle, and the question is would it be better? Basically, if someone even brings this up that's close to you, what they're asking you is, are you going to make me keep taking care of you, or do you just want this to be over?
Are you going to put another obligation on me?
And it becomes this area of, do I just have to be more casually cruel to you until you finally accept that this is what's best? And once you've offered it and they say no, every time something happens, and you look at them, they go, we don't have to be doing this now. You chose this.
And don't forget money. Because you can't forget money. Because, oh no, you know, going to be in a nursing home, that's $10,000 a month. You only have $250,000 or $300,000 that your whole house is worth. 2 years, it's going to be gone. You're not going to give anything to your children. You're not going to give anything to your grandchildren. And you don't think children are kind of thinking that? The government taught them this is righteousness, is you think about how do you save money. And there's plenty of children that are going to go, maybe have you thought about suicide? Do you really want to go through this pain, Mom? It's going to be so painful. You're going to lose all your hair. It's going to be horrible. Now's the time to make the decision. Why go through that? Why not just end it now?
And I think the right way, I should amend something I said earlier when I talked about the slippery slope argument. The answer is you're creating the slope. The slope didn't even exist before. There wasn't an option. When you say to someone, no, life is sacred, and you draw that line, they can't even contemplate. You know, they would have to murder their parents. They would have to go outside and do something that everyone says is horrible. But instead, what you've done
now
is
now we can all conspire together.
Right. I think we've
called it good.
People go, what people call a slippery slope argument is literally they made the slope and then they're mad at you for pointing it out.
And, you know, in Isaiah where it says, woe to those who call evil good and good evil. I mean, this is what it looks like. You know, when you read in Romans 1 how they, you know, in their unrighteousness, they wanted to deny God. They did not want to retain God in their knowledge. So God turns them over, right? I mean, that's the slippery slope. Is God says, you pursue after sin, and guess what? I'm going to give you plenty of it. And that's what happens, and that's what happens here. And then people kind of go, wait, maybe this is going too fast. And some people say that, but all of a sudden, everybody's bought into the conspiracy. Everybody's going, this is good. This is working. Look at all these people that we're alleviating their suffering for. By the way, why don't we expand it a bit? They may not realize how good it is for them. So let's as soon as they say now's the time, we should go, yep, let's do it, because they might change their mind. And think how different it was considered, right? Because there are instances where people ask for assistance in suicide, where they're about to die. Like in 1 Samuel 31:4-5, then Saul said to his armor bearer, draw your sword and thrust me through with it, lest these uncircumcised men come and thrust me through and abuse me. But his armor bearer would not, for he was greatly afraid. Therefore Saul took a sword and fell on it. And then his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead. He also fell on his sword and died with him. These are unrighteous men. They're not like these are like great guys, right? And they even understood this is wrong. They even understood you don't go there. And we've moved so far from basic biblical principles that we think it's okay to try to talk or, I mean, as a, in Western culture, I'm not saying us personally, but in Western culture, we've kind of reached the point where it's moving more and more that it's okay to try to kill your, talk your parents into killing themselves. Think it, I mean, that's patricide. Think how evil that is. And you have to figure with the average age being something like 75, that a lot of this is they're talked into it by their children.
And I mean, and the, just while we're here, one of the things that we should really consider as Christians is how you push back against this is, I mean, obviously, don't put your children, your parents, into a rest home, into a nursing home. I mean, if they just need somewhere to live, do everything you can to let them live with you. Do everything you can to take care of them. I mean, I, every time we talk about this, I realize I need to go see my parents more than I do. I need to go, you know what I mean? And I mean, we live far enough away that it's a little bit of a hassle to do.
Should we just skip the second episode? You can go now.
And there's always...
Wake them up in the middle of the night.
And there's always a ton of stuff going on, but... You know, I'm thinking of the example I make for my children. I mean, I have a bunch of children, but they're all looking at me going, it's not worth it for you to drive out there. It's not worth it for you to take us out there. And so there's this part of it where, I mean, the way you deal with this thing is you have to come at it. You don't just go, we need to lower the deaths. The answer is we need to increase the life. We need to increase the, this is what salt does. Salt makes the world a better place. It increases the flavor of the world.
And we need to look at the value of life as being made in the image of God. And it's easy to go, oh, that baby in the womb, made in the image of God. It's easy to go to your parents, made in the image of God. How about the drunkard who's lying in the gutter and throw up? How about
the animals coming across the border?
Right. And
you mean people coming across
the border?
Yeah, right.
That's some people call them animals. No.
But no, I mean, it's the same point. As long as we're going to treat people as if they're unhuman, we're acting the same way. And we need to, how do you talk about people that when you're talking to your children about them, about those who, and hey, a lot of times, you know, you look at how many people have died from drug abuse in this country. It's easy to go, well, you know, they were doing drugs illegally and stuff. They didn't have self-control, et cetera, et cetera. Instead of going, no, that's somebody who's made in the image of God that was destroyed. And we need to be really careful to teach our children not to look down on anybody. Because our greatest value is we're made in the image of God. The drunk in the gutter, his greatest value is he's made in the image of God. The baby in the womb, the 95-year-old, it doesn't matter. And that's the mindset that the church needs to start adopting. And as Joshua rightly said, the immigrant that is illegal and broke the law and there's problems with all that. But to look at them and say that they're not human. Because if you were in their situation a lot of times where they had that much financial incentive, a lot of us would do the same thing, except for the mercy of God.
Because
we're not in that situation.
And I think what you mean, we've become so polarized that when someone hears you say those things, what they come away with is they go, what you're saying is you can't have any immigration law. What you're saying is that every homeless person, you have to give them whatever they want. The answer is no, but their sin has to be dealt with. And the solution is not pretending like they're not people. You have, where do you go? How do you deal with what's happening? And the church goes, oh, I don't know, man. I don't know. And the church is supposed to be the one who deals with it. I mean, this is it.
And we've done an episode on immigration, and part of it comes down to the fundamental thing. If you just apply rightly the principle, he who does not work shall not eat, you solve a lot of the problems with illegal immigration.
Right.
And you say, if you come here, you have to submit to the laws of this country. And we do all kinds of other things, but what we don't want to do is protect our culture. Instead, what we want to do is say these are animals.
Right. Well, we've given up on the idea that we have a culture. The only culture we have left is pretty much comfort.
And if all the culture you have is comfort, you will end up becoming a culture of death like Canada.
the last criteria in the list is that they must give informed consent to receive medical assistance in dying. I mean, when you think about that, you go, I mean, first of all, we're obsessed with the idea of consent. We're obsessed with the idea that consent basically justifies anything. Anything a consenting adult wants to do, he should be allowed to do, as long as it doesn't hurt someone else. And then we go, oh, wait, we're crossing this line. Well, as long as he wants it, it's not hurting him. And you should read, I mean, a passage, this is a passage that I go to fairly often outside of the abortion clinic. Psalm 10, verses 4 through 8. The wicked, in his proud countenance, does not seek God. God is in none of his thoughts. His ways are always prospering. Your judgments are far above, out of his sight. As for all of his enemies, he sneers at them. He has said in his heart, I shall not be moved. I shall never be in adversity. His mouth is full of cursing and deceit and oppression. Under his tongue is trouble and iniquity. He sits in the lurking places of the villages. In the secret places he murders the innocent. His eyes are secretly fixed on the helpless. So when you think about informed consent, I mean, one of the things that the abortion clinic we talk about here is the abortion clinic is like this, and it causes the mothers that come there to become like this. You look at what it says. I mean, they're because of pride, they don't think about God. They're not thinking about who God is. They're not thinking about God's judgment. If somebody says, can I send you to face God right now? That would be a very different question than do you want the pain to stop?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at the way, you know, his ways are always prospering. The person who's doing this, I mean, he's thinking about pleasure. He's thinking about the good things of life. And even look at it. Your judgments are far above, out of his sight. You look at how much judgment God has poured out on our nation. You look at how much judgment God... Most people, they ignore the judgment. When I think about the judgments that God's poured out, I think of the later things. But God's been judging us for 100 years. He's been judging us for longer than that. All the little shifts that have happened in our society, they're part of our judgments. The fact that we don't die at home, the fact that... Those are all part of the judgments. And we don't think about them. God is in none of his thoughts. And this is, as you read this, you go, this is like a bullseye pattern. At the center of it is the worst, but we're all in there. We've all been affected by this. We're all at different stages of not thinking about God as much as we should. And this is where you come to, is that as a culture, you murder the innocent, but there are really specific people. This is how they think. They desire to murder the innocent. They're secretly fixed on the helpless.
And I think when you go backwards too, right, where it starts with and murders the innocent, and they're focused on the helpless. And we just have to accept that there are people like that. And their means to accomplish that is through oppression. Their means to accomplish that in this case is they go, you know what? Don't you care about your children? You're going to eat up all... You spent your life earning that money and you've built up a nest egg. And now you're just going to consume it when you could bless your children? You're going to make your son come over and help you and change your diaper? This is what you want? And this is what people who are murdering the innocent do. And we want to step back and act like because somebody was oppressed into giving informed consent, that somehow that makes the person doing it innocent. Now, the people, like you were saying, I mean, I hadn't seen that statistic about whatever it is, 89, 86 providers that are doing it. When you think about that statistic, understand these are the people who take delight in murdering the innocent. And the way they do it is they oppress people and put pressure on people so that they give quote unquote informed consent. Yeah, they did informed consent because they were abused by people who didn't have their best interests at heart. That's why it's localized, because there's only a certain number of people that are that cruel that will talk old people into killing themselves, that will actually participate in it. There might be a lot of other doctors, right? I mean, the legislature voted for this. There's lots of people in Canada that those this is good. In the United States, there's lots of people who go, of course you should be allowed to murder yourself, without thinking about what that really means and the effect that it has to have people. Does anybody want to go to a doctor that loves to murder people? That this is the profession he chose? Who would go to a doctor like that? Because we know this is true. We know Psalm 10's true. We recognize it, that the person who's going to be doing that, the person that's going to be participating in MAID as a provider, they're going to want to kill the innocent. Just like the person who's doing at the abortion clinic. Do you want them as a gynecologist if they love to murder babies? And this is why you separate it out, because it is a certain class of people that will want to do this. And those kind of people, they will oppress people. They will push them. They'll do it subtly. They'll do it smoothly. But they will oppress them to get, quote unquote, informed consent.
And I mean, all it takes for it to be lies is just as simple as saying this is your decision to make. It's not their decision to make. God doesn't give you the right to end your life. So,
right.
Right in the law, that's the lying, that's the oppression right there.
You're not allowed to justify evil because of oppression. And that's part of it, is all the way down. You know, it's like, because, I mean, a lot of the girls who go to the abortion clinic, they're there because, you know, if somebody else told them, if you have that baby, this isn't going to go well. You know, I mean, the other people weren't going to.
The number of times their parents say it.
Right.
It's just so shocking.
Everybody around them. But I remember one of the things that we'll say to them, and you try to say as you go, there's many of you are here because the world has treated you poorly, and I believe it. But you've taken the oppression of the world and you've turned around and you've decided to oppress the person who is weaker than you. And so when you look at these things, you look at all, I mean, it's oppression on top of oppression on top of oppression. And the person at the bottom is just they're just at the end of the oppression line. And then we go, well, that makes it okay. No, it doesn't make it okay.
And you look at somebody that's in their 80s and go, he just doesn't have the strength to resist. And that's why they're at the bottom and all this stack is stacked on upon them. And they go, yeah, I agree. It's still oppression. It's still evil in the sight of God. And God tells us over and over again in his word that the duty of the church is to stop that oppression. Later in Psalm 10, I think at the end, Lord, you have heard the desire of the humble. You will prepare their heart. You will cause your ear to hear, to do justice to the fatherless and the oppressed, that the man of earth may oppress no more. Natural man wants to oppress. This is why you get, you know, in Quebec, 7.3% of people that are dying because somebody talked them into saying, I want to die. This is the natural man, the man of earth, the carnal man. He wants to oppress. And godly men are not to be that way. We're supposed to be exactly the opposite. But I see so many people in churches that are oppressed. You look at most mega churches, and the mega churches, the pastor's oppressing the people that are there. Some of these churches, like you look at them and you just watch them manipulate their people. You watch them oppress their people. You know, an example near us is J.D. Greer. And he's talking to his people about how much he hates DEI. Well, he puts DEI in practice and insists that they have to do these DEI things. I mean, it's like pure oppression. It's just so evil. And this is what ungodly men do. This is the nature of people who hate God, is they want to oppress other people. They want to puff up their pride by destroying other people. And sometimes they're just doing it because lust of the flesh. I don't want to have to visit my mother every day. And some of it's because they just like to kill the innocent. And the church is supposed to be the one that goes, that is evil. It's not borderline evil. It's pure evil. And it will cause destruction on societies. And we're seeing it all through the West. All the abortion. Our societies are disappearing. You look at, you know, how long will it be before Europe is majority Muslim? Not very long. How long will it be until the United States is a majority Muslim? Not very long. Because we're destroying ourselves because we don't mind oppression.
We'd prefer to be oppressed than to be righteous.
We'd prefer to have oppression because maybe we can oppress somebody else.
I think one of the things that the nature of evil is it's very strategic in that it structures things so that you feel like there's nothing you can do about it. You know, there are times when we're at the abortion clinic where you feel like it is good to talk to the people that are there, but you feel like what you should be yelling at, you want to be able to go to each politician and go, you want to talk to them. But the way they, and the other forces, you know, the people who want this place to be here, the people who are making the money from it, you really don't have a way to go to them. And we were reading the other day in Matthew, and Jesus goes, the harvest is plenteous. The harvest is wide into harvest. Pray to the Lord of the harvest that he will send laborers. And that's And that's really what God forces us to do, is to go back and cry to Him. Because in the end, it doesn't mean you don't do the work you
have
to do.
That's what I was going
to
say. Some of it.
You do your work, but right. you also go back and you cry to Him and say, you have to flip the world over. I can't flip the world over. And I think that's part of it, is that it requires us to do that, to do the work, and to plead to God.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times people go, oh, yeah, I'll pray about it. Without going, there's things you can do. You can, when somebody's child commits suicide and they go, oh, yeah, he was such a wonderful life. It's like, don't pretend. I know you're suffering. I have great sympathy for your suffering. But he didn't commit suicide because his life was so great. And this is how people want to spin it all the time. The reality is he committed suicide because he hated his life. And let's not pretend like it's anything else. And those lies don't help anybody. Those lies just hurt people. But yet we want to turn around and go, and sometimes you have to go, right? Because how many pastors, the person commits suicide and then their pastor preaches a sermon, their parents' pastor preaches a sermon at the funeral about, you know, at least he's in a better place now. No, he's not. He's in hell. And we need to stop lying, because that lying allows people to be oppressed.
You're saying, because it's truth that sets you free. Come down here with us.
Right.
What we did was good. What we chose was right. Don't consider your ways. I'm not going to consider mine even after it happened. There is a real time where we have a responsibility to say to other people, God has chastened me. God has shown me that I was wrong. And here's how I was wrong. I did not discipline my child when I should have. I did not do these things. Because if you don't tell them, you hate them. If you don't warn them, you hate them. And we act like we have no obligation to warn one another, and particularly within the church, I think, is what you're talking about here. I mean, you see the world do it. That goes back to Psalm 10. His ways are always prospering, right? You
know? But we're the salt and the light of the earth.
If the
church doesn't do it, it won't happen out in society. And we forget the power of the church, that the reality is if the church was willing to just say the hard words, he committed suicide, I'm sorry, your child's in hell now. If we're just willing to say those things, that's how you stop other people. Not that they won't go to hell, but that's how you stop them from committing suicide. The church needs to start saying, this is justice, is not to say, oh yeah, that they were fine. And remember, like Rick Warren, when his son committed suicide through a drug overdose, I believe it was, he took drugs to do it. But he comes out and says, what a great Christian he is. I mean, we need to stop this garbage and allow this. We have to stop allowing this in the church. This simply is not true.
We could start by going, Rick Warren isn't that.
Yeah, Rick Warren should learn the gospel, because he clearly doesn't know it. He says that you're saved and then there's nothing to do with repentance and salvation, which is clearly unbiblical. He doesn't believe you need to be born again, according to his books. I mean, it's just false. But people don't denounce him as false, and he's leading people in very, very, very damaging ways. Micah 6:8 says that the people of God have to do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly before God. If we don't care about justice, then you get the situation in Canada. You get similar situations in like 14 states and the District of Columbia, where all of a sudden it becomes okay to murder people. If the church doesn't speak for justice, justice will die in the streets. Thanks for joining us.
This has been The Conquering Truth, a project of Reformation Baptist Church. If you found this helpful, you can visit us online at theconqueringtruth.com and subscribe here or in your favorite podcast app. Thanks for watching.